Welcome to the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore's podcast channel. We're excited to bring you season three of new episodes featuring in-depth content across Singapore, ASEAN, and the United Kingdom. We've had some extraordinary guests on our channel, including Formula One's Claire Williams.
I'm a firm believer that any great team, any successful team has a great culture flowing through it. You aren't successful if you don't. So we put a lot of work into this.
Renowned mountaineer Kenton Cool.
That 2019 there with a client, a big storm came in and literally destroyed Camp 2. And I've got some video footage of Sherpas like trying to hold on to the tent fabric as it blows away. And
the Royal Navy's Commodore Steve Morehouse, commander of the UK Carrier Strike Group.
The squadron of F-35 aircraft we have on board is a Royal Air Force squadron, and the personnel in there are drawn from both the Navy and the Air Force. So, you know, what better way of showing just the efficiency and the joined up nature that we now have?
And distinguished Sky News anchor Jeremy Thompson.
We had two little vans with satellite links, and we leapfrogged up the road to Pristina, the capital, throughout that first day, with non-stop coverage from basically inside a war zone.
We also sit down with the likes of TikTok, Twitch, and Twitter, and continue to bring you conversations around business and trade, leadership and people, sustainability, sports and arts, and much, much more. Thank you, as always, for your support, and we hope you enjoy this podcast.
Hello, and thank you so much to the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore for the opportunity to talk about this special project. I'm Sarah. I'm the Director of Arts at the British Council in Singapore, and I'm feeling very privileged to be here with the award-winning theatre maker and HIV activist Jeremy Goldstein. So we're really excited to share more about This Is Who I Am, which is a digital theatre project co-created by Jeremy and developed and directed in collaboration with UK leading theatre director Jen Hayes. So this project is being presented by the British Council in Singapore and London Artist Projects, also in partnership with the National Library Board in Singapore. In a nutshell, it presents autobiographic monologues by disabled artists from Singapore and the UK, sharing stories that would most likely otherwise go both untold and unacknowledged. So the aims of this digital theatre project are therefore to raise awareness and generate understanding, and in this way, hopefully shift perceptions around disability and also foster more inclusive societies. So while this work focuses on disability, its core is essentially about EDI values that reach way beyond disability to all marginalized groups. And it invites us all to question, as the project is named, who we are, how we are seen, and how we see others. So very shortly, I'll ask Jeremy to share his valuable insights on this project, but to contextualize it, very briefly, I had the privilege of watching Jeremy's Truth to Power Cafe, out of which This Is Who I Am developed, and was blown away by the work and by how the participants shared so nakedly and courageously about emotional thorns in their lives, and how this not only provoked a liberation within the participants, but also about this, how the sharing of common experience of pain and prejudice was also a catalyst for the audience to speak up without shame. So I then thought that this work would be an excellent step in our trajectory of inclusive arts work that the British Council has been doing to support artists with disabilities who want to make a difference through the arts. And so connected to the very brilliant Jeremy to make this happen. And I'd now like to hand over to you, Jeremy, because you are the heart and soul of this project. And given that I briefly mentioned Truth to Power Cafe as a precursor to This Is Who I Am, would you like to share a bit more about the fascinating and powerful background to this work, perhaps also with relation to the British Library?
Yes. Hello, everybody. Hello from London, I should say. It's 10 o'clock here in the morning. It's a beautiful sunny day, sunny spring day, and I'm thrilled to be here. I'm completely honoured to have been able to create this project with you, Sarah and our team of participants in Singapore and London. It's quite fitting that we should be talking about it this week, actually, because, you know, it's 7 years ago, this week, in fact, that I ventured forth into the Harold Pinter archive at the British Library in London. Because the background to this project, or the genesis to the work, really grew out of my relationship with my father, Mick Goldstein, who grew up with Harold, who I'm sure many of your listeners know. For those of your listeners who don't know who he was a Nobel Prize winning playwright, probably one of the greatest English playwrights of the 20th century. And anyway, my father, Mick Goldstein, grew up with Harold. They met in 1947 after the war, and they maintained their friendship for over 60 years, during which time they remained firmly on the side of people who were marginalized and or believed themselves to be occupied in one way or another. And they also, especially in their later kind of years when they were sort of more politically active and engaged in various causes sort of around the world, they maintained their belief in speaking truth to power. And when my father died in 2013, I went into the British Library and I started reading their personal correspondence. Because just before my dad had died, the British Library had acquired about 100 or so letters that were written between them. I knew of their existence. Wow. I didn't know what they contained, but I went into the library and I started reading them. And, you know, of course, you know, we don't read our parents, you know, personal correspondence. And what I discovered in those letters I was able to meet my father as he was as a young man in the
1950s. How special.
It was very special because, you know, we had a very difficult relationship to the point that we were estranged before he died. And, you know, part of repairing the damage between my father and I I was able to do that through reading the letters.
And very cathartic, I'm sure. And also such a wonderful parallel that we're doing this project in Singapore in partnership with the National Library Board. So, I mean, I think that's also just lovely that those roots are synchronized.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, I remember the first day I went into the British Library and started reading the letters, you know, I was just kind of madly in love, you know, with the environment and just the learning, you know, that people kind of undertake in those institutions, and the fact that it's all free, you know, at the point of access. And I remember.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, no, it was very special for me. And I suppose in making Truth to Power Cafe and in This Is Who I Am, I've been able to, such as the power of art, that I've been able to repair the damaged relationship between my father and I, and that in the fact that both these projects have been my own path towards truth and reconciliation. And reading the letters as I did, you know, several years ago now, enabled me to see my father in as he was as a young man. And from there, I was able to just get a much better understanding of who he was, why he grew up to be the person he was. And from there, I was able to find, I was able to discover empathy, and I found a love for him, which I hadn't experienced when he was alive.
I think that's so key to all your work, and it's what for me makes it so incredibly powerful, is because what you do provokes compassion and understanding, and in that way bridges gaps, and you know, it really is essentially about something that speaks to every human being, all of us, and our desire to be loved unconditionally, both by ourselves and by others, and a desire to be who we are without fear of judgment and without being misunderstood. So I think your trajectory through the letters and through the work you have created makes for an exceptionally powerful work that speaks to each and every human being.
Well, thank you, Sarah. I mean, I'm glad. No, it's great that you see that. It's great that anybody sees that within the work, because I can't really say that it was by design that those messages that those messages were created specifically within the work. I think they're just implicit within the way that the work comes across. And for me personally, I think through reading those letters and creating the project, what happened to me was that the cycle of that, of my inherited trauma, which I had always believed that I'd inherited from my father, had actually been broken forever. And what I was doing through both Truth to Power Cafe and This Is Who I Am is that I was using the truth and the pain of my own lived experience to enable others to express theirs. And I think maybe that's partly the reason why people look upon the work in the way that you do.
I think definitely, as I mentioned before, the fact it's so empowering that firstly you set the precedent of talking about your own pain and then empowered others to do that. And it's really incredibly powerful. I had an experience recently in Singapore where I was on a panel discussion, and I briefly mentioned this project that we'll be launching, and it was in an inclusive arts sector. And I mentioned that This Is Who I Am was about asserting that exactly that, and doing that without shame and with a view of understanding instead of judging, and a place where the performer meets the viewer and everyone is respected and no one feels left out. And actually during the Q&A, one lovely lady spontaneously stood up and said, in the spirit of This Is Who I Am, and she took off her hat to show that she was undergoing chemotherapy and had lost her head. And because of what the work stands for, in that very brief time, she felt empowered to do that. So really, Jeremy, I think that's the true power of your work and what you've been able to achieve.
Wow.
Which is really amazing. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you. That's an amazing story, Sarah. Thank you very much for telling me. But it's true, you know, I'm also cast in the shows as a participant myself. So, you know, so I'm not really asking anyone to do anything that I'm not prepared to do myself.
Mm.
And also I think, like, cause you know, I'm 52 now, and for much of my career, you know, I worked as a theatre producer, in London. I mean, I grew up in Sydney, but I've been living in London now for the last 27 years. And, for most of that time, I was a theatre producer. I have my own company called London Artists Projects, which, happens to be celebrating its 20th anniversary this year, which is very exciting. But it was only really through making the work and reading those letters that was the thing which really paved the way for my transition from producer to writer, mm-hmm. performer and artist. And quite frankly, it has to be said that before I started making Truth to Power Cafe, and it was 2015-16 now, I had a real fear of public speaking.
Amazing.
I found it very difficult to just stand up in front of a room and talk about the artists I was working with, talk about the shows that I was producing. And of course, this just didn't really help my arts career much, you can imagine. So it was time. I guess it was time to just really move on from working as a producer. And you know, I was very lucky. I found this project when I did, and I guess, you know, that was the way I was able to transition to the role of artist, writer, performer. And you know, I can say absolutely from the truth of my lived experience that it's been the most empowering, kind of life changing move that I've made to date, you know, in my life. And
that is so fantastic. And also really, you know, as a testament to how the arts as a channel can support challenging prejudice by giving a voice to underrepresented communities, which is what you do so well. And I think that also pertains to the line in the novel The Dwarf, and how This Is Who I Am as a title came about. Perhaps you'd like to share more about that, which I just found very, very powerful and fascinating.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, Harold Pinter, I mean, well, of course, he was known as a playwright and a poet, principally, I guess. But he wrote a novel. He only wrote one novel. His one and only novel. It was written in the 1950s, and it was called The Dwarfs. It wasn't published until the 1990s. Faber and Faber published it. In quite sort of late in Harold's career. But I thoroughly recommend anyone who's interested in learning about the work of Harold Pinter, I would say go out and buy the novel. Pinter's biographer and former Guardian theatre critic, Michael Billington, says of The Dwarfs that it provides the key to Pinter's later works. And much of that work, you know, is very much about kind of power and occupation, but set in a more kind of domestic setting. You know, we often think of Pinter's work his work presented rigorous warnings of how tendencies to betrayal and personal isolation cause rifts between friends, lovers, and communities, whereas Truth to Power and This Is Who I Am seek to offer audiences a sense of their own agencies in repairing and recovering loss and identity. And The Dwarfs, the lead character in The Dwarfs, the protagonist in that novel, his name is Len, was based on my father, Mick.
Wow.
And there's a line in the novel where he says, where Len says, or my father says, "I've never been able to look in the mirror and say, this is who I am." And I remember when I read that, I couldn't get it out of my head because, you know, it was really all the evidence that I needed to confirm that it was my father's lack of fulfillment and I suppose, you know, to some extent, disillusion with the world were the things which he, I guess, he sort of really took out on me. And that those were the things which I felt really came between us, and that caused the rift. And it was one of the things which kind of caused the rift within our relationship.
And I also think it's so very, although it was deeply personal to you, it's so universal, because I think that applies to each and every human being. That's an extremely powerful thing to be able to look in the mirror and say, this is who I am. And I think we find that especially with marginalized communities and people with living with disabilities, often find it challenging to assert themselves in a way that they understood and that they're seen for who they are beyond their disabilities. And this is why I think this project was so important in Singapore, because it gave artists the opportunity to say, this is who I am, and please see me for who I am, and realize that we share pain and share scars, all of us, visible or invisible, and to connect with the audience. An incredibly powerful line, both personally and universally.
Sarah, can I just say what really happened with that line in the end was that I suppose the projects have been described to me as a conscious transformation of history into opportunity. Because what happened with that line, you know, I've never been able to look in the mirror and say, this is who I am. What we've done with these projects is just is I suppose we've reappropriated it, but we've done so in a way which enables others to actually say this is who I am. Whereas my father was never able to say that. We've now taken it forward, you know, within a context where my own sort of inherited trauma has been broken, and we've now taken that line and enabled others to express themselves through that kind of single line which appeared in Pinter's novel in the 1950s.
That's just amazing, absolutely amazing.
We have accumulated now nearly 600 stories from people of all ages, experiences and backgrounds. Some of them have been in respect of kind of speaking truth to power. Of course, you know, this is the first edition of This Is Who I Am, the Singapore edition of that is the first time we're doing this project. And we very much hope that This Is Who I Am will travel the world in much the same way that Truth to Power Cafe has, because, you know, we've done about nearly 50 performances of that project in 6 different countries, and it's now been looked upon as its own unique kind of theatrical genre of
amazing
power theatre. And I very much hope that, you know, This Is Who I Am can follow closely in those footsteps.
Well, we hope so, and we're really excited about sharing it in Singapore soon. And I'd love to learn more about your experience of working with these wonderful artists in Singapore, and if there was anything that stood out for you in the sharing of their lived experiences.
Yes, you know what? That's such a great question, because, you know, everything we do is always a learning curve, isn't it? Like, every project we make, conversations, you know, just how we engage with people, you know, we're always kind of walking away with we learn things about ourselves and we gain new perspectives and so on. And when I set out, you know, on making this project with my long-term collaborator, Jen Hayes, who's based in Liverpool, really terrific theatre director in Liverpool. One of the things which we both took away from this project is that the people, our artist participants who took part in This Is Who I Am, do not see themselves as any different from anybody else. You know, it's like the difference because differences are learned, aren't they? You know, we're all born the same. We're all born on a level playing field. But, you know, as we grow up, you know, we're schooled in the art of difference, you know, and I think a lot of the time, you know, what I mean, I'm a white kind of middle class guy currently living in London, you know, and I guess, you know, I was raised within that sort of patriarchal view of how people look upon others who are different to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the great lessons or one of the great things that I've learned, you know, in the last sort of few years of making these projects is that these differences are defined by largely white people who have also grown up in that kind of patriarchal system. Because when you ask the people who are differently abled as how they define themselves, they very rarely define themselves by their disability. Yeah,
indeed.
And this became apparent to us when we were working on this project. I mean our Singapore participants, as well as our UK participants, when we have got 3 from the UK and 5 from Singapore, but, you know, they define themselves as storytellers, percussionists, women, daughters, sisters, sons, authors, policymakers, role models, globetrotters, art lovers. Alistair Ong, you know, called himself defender of mankind. You know, I absolutely love that.
Totally. So challenging all these stereotypes that we might have, and all the artists have done that in their own ways and are being leaders as well and embarking on disability-led work. Stephanie and Lily are definitely doing that. Also Lily, and as you mentioned, Alistair and Amar, all of them in their own right, as well as the UK participants, very strongly taking forward amazing work that is definitely not defined by any type of disability.
No, and I mean, also, you know, I'm also quite openly, I'm HIV positive. I have been for 20 years. You know, I don't define myself as an HIV positive man. I don't define myself as a gay man. There's many more sides to me than those two parts of my personality.
As to each and every one of us, and that's why this work is so universal, it really speaks to something in each one of us, and to how we perceive ourselves and how we perceive others, often wrongly and often just because of lack of opportunity to have awareness and to be able to step into another shoe. So that's why this work is so meaningful, to have that opportunity.
I mean, there's a couple of lines, you know, which really stick out for me. One in particular, you know, which Lily Goh said, you know, which she wrote, because I mean, let's remember all the participants in both Truth to Power Cafe and This Is Who I Am. They, you know, they're writing their own texts. So unlike verbatim theatre, we're not taking their texts forward and asking other actors to present them. We're asking our participants to write on the truth of their lived experience, and then we're asking them to present them to us, you know, as the audience. But one of the lines which Lily did say was that, you know, she wanted to imagine a world designed for everyone. And
indeed.
Why not? We want
indeed.
That too. We all do.
You know? Indeed. And I also loved Dan's line about saying, I'm here to be seen and be loved, and yes, my definite doesn't stop me, and why should it?
Exactly.
And I think this is also all, you know, it brings us back to a model that's been very important to the work that I've been leading on at British Council, which is the social model of disability, which really puts the onus on society to make the changes necessary to accommodate and create access for everyone, as opposed to just expecting everyone to follow what society deems as normative and acceptable. So that's also really important.
Because you see, one of the things which I've learned, you know, over my years, like, because, you know, I was a founder member of AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power in Melbourne in the late 80s. I mean, that was a movement, you know, which really changed the world as far as kind of health treatments go. One of the things which I've learned, you know, during that time was that, you know, if you want freedom, you have to take it. Because no one is going to give it to you, you know, you have to be the one to, you have to, in some ways, you have to be the architect of your own destiny or of the freedom that you want, and you know, however much, you know, we all want to live in this world designed for everyone, we're not there yet. Yeah, so I do think it's projects like this which do create discussion and opportunities for you know, for looking at people who aren't necessarily from that kind of mainstream kind of view of kind of white kind of middle class sort of patriarchal society. So yeah, you know, it's
definitely
been very, it's important.
Yes, so important, and I think the contribution.
Yeah, important that we have moments like this to really explore that and to present, because not everybody thinks the way that we do either. You know, you have to, you know, we live in a, thankfully, you know, we live in a democracy, but within that democracy, one still has to argue your place at the table to those who won't necessarily agree with you. And I mean, one of the things about speaking truth to power is that it's a non-violent means of conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we need to just think about that for a moment and what that means, you know, when you're living in a kind of democratic system. You know, you still have to kind of sometimes, you know, however much we may not want to do it, because we can't understand why people don't understand why we think the way we do. If there are those people in power who don't think like that, then we're still in a position where we have to debate and we have to argue our place within the world.
Indeed. And I think it's about, as you say, it's about using art as a non-violent way of raising levels of consciousness and of the contribution that this work makes to awareness. And reminds me of one of my favorite quotes spoken by Nelson Mandela, which is, as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. Oh. And I think that's exactly what your work and what This Is Who I Am does. It shines a light to help diminish unconscious bias and prejudice. So I think I really see it quite literally as a light, enlightening and just shining on places where people are maybe ready or not ready to go to yet, but bringing light.
You know, I'm waving my arms around in the air at the moment. That's such a beautiful thing to say. I love it.
And I think also it's really, I think what's another special thing about This Is Who I Am has been that because we've had participants from both the UK and Singapore, which of course is in line with the British Council's cultural relations aims and creating trust between the UK and other countries. But it's also been so important in showing that there really is no difference between the experiences in the UK and in Singapore in terms of these participants' desire to express what's in their hearts. So I don't know how you would feel about that. How would you comment on that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've been working now with the British Council over many years. I've been involved in many of our projects for London Artist Projects, going right back to, God, the early days, back in the early 2000s. And I think, you know, some of the opportunities that I've had that have been given to me by the British Council have really enabled audiences to kind of look at themselves differently through some of the shows, you know, which we've made over the years. You know, they've enabled, you know, this is the power of art, isn't it? I mean, it's
indeed,
you know, we especially theatre, you know, there's one quote, you know, which Harold Pinter said, you know, as I was going through the letters in the British Library, you know, there was one which he wrote to one of their great friends, Henry Wolfe, where he wrote in one letter, he said, "The theatre is one of the good things of civilization." And I think the role that the British Council has played in taking, you know, British theatre, British artists, international artists, bringing them together in the way that you have, you know, between Singapore and the UK, has just been invaluable. And I think it's brought communities, people together the world over. And you know, I just think, you know, long may that reign. And I think it's become even more important now, especially, you know, in the shadow of Brexit. You know, we're no longer part of the EU. So I think, you know, I mean, British theatre, art, publishing, media, I mean, these have always been, music in particular, I mean, these have always been the things which I think people have defined Britain, which people from abroad have defined Britain by. I know, I mean, that was one of the things which got me to London in the first place back in 1994. Partly the reason I came is because I was just so obsessed by kind of British music, pop music. Like I was a big fan of the Smiths and, you know, all of that music, all of that great music, you know, which came out of England in the 1980s. And, you know, I was just really obsessed by that culture. And that's what got me.
Yeah, the power of culture, indeed. And yeah. And we speak about soft power, but it truly is the power of art and how it has the possibility to transform lives and to strengthen more inclusive societies, really importantly, by sharing stories across cultures, which is what we've managed to do with this project.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, I think it's really just been the greatest privilege to firstly work with you and also to have this discussion today. Hugest thanks to yourself and to Jen and to all our wonderful artists from the UK, Nadia, Irving, Dan, and from Singapore, Stephanie, Lily, Lily, Alistair, Namar. And I'd just like to end off by saying that This Is Who I Am, I believe, truly manages to reach into the depths of personal yet universal experiences and pull back the veil of preconceived judgments to help us all diminish the unconscious biases and prejudice that we might have and to generate greater connection and compassion. So thank you so much, Jeremy. And if there's anything that you would like to end off as we close this, that would be lovely.
Well, first of all, I just want to thank you, Sarah, for commissioning the project in the first place. I mean, it's been a great pleasure working with you, knowing you, and Lei Hong, and all our participants in the UK and Singapore. I think perhaps maybe I should end with one of the, with a poem.
That would be lovely.
Yeah, it's a poem we hear in "This Is Who I Am." It's a poem which I feel speaks to diversity and difference. Mm-hmm. And it goes like this. You've got to slide between the living and the dead. Open up that window in your head. Take the world, shake it, crush it, remake it. Open up that window in your head. When the moon invades your soul, you want to scream. You're the iceberg in the center. You're that old bitch dementia. When the moon invades your soul, you want to scream. When they pull your heartstrings out, it's only love. It's a mix of joy and pain, but you'll come alive again. When they pull your heartstrings out, it's only love. Different gardens, different flowers, diamond caves and silver towers. Draw those curtains, disappear. We won't hear, we won't hear. The only makeshift angels are ourselves. My tattered wings made from the garbage of my heart. To make love, we don't need beds. We'll tear the world to shreds, racing down that every road in sight. You've got to slide between the living and the dead. Open up that window in your head. Take the world, shake it, crush it, remake it. Open up that window in your head.
Wow, how absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much, Jeremy. You read that in an incredibly exquisite way. Thank you. And a big thank you to opening the windows in our heads and to everyone listening today. And again, thank you to the British Chamber of Commerce for this opportunity to share this work wider, to open more windows and more heads. Please do watch the work, This Is Who I Am. Online, it will be available as well as at some national library branches. Yes, get online, see the work, and try to open some windows in your heads. Huge thanks again, Jeremy, and to the British Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you
everyone for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the British Chambers podcast. Before you go, don't forget to subscribe, and why not leave us a rating and review on Spotify, Apple, Google, and the other podcast platforms. For more information, please visit our website at www.britcham.org.sg and tune in next time for a brand new episode.